Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 253, episode 1 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness, and it is, of course, Tuesday, September 6th, 2022. Holy shit.
Oh my gosh, we made it. It's Tuesday, and you know what that means? It's National Read a Book Day. Uh-huh. Okay, read a damn book, please. Don't just, you know, don't just read the spine of a book and be like, I read that. Read the book, please.
I actually had that book recommended to me in an Instagram photo, and so I therefore read the title, which is half the battle, if not more. It's also Reverse 69 Day, right? It's 9-6-22.
Hey, whoa, I didn't think about that. Reverse 69 yeah. Day, yep, let them know.
Why 96? Why did 96 not get any of the love, you know? Well, is it just because it makes us picture even older people?
No, 96, I think, is like more Batman and Robin. You're back to back.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess that does.
96 evokes to me. The back, you're back to back.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Now that so it I'm could picturing
be,
it.
Yeah, getting, yeah, you know, be like
now Batman that I'm picturing
Robin,
it, I've been 69ing all wrong all this time. Oh, boy. All right. I've been 96ing. Well, anyways, my name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. On a Dark Desert Highway, Cool Ranch in my hair, one smell of gorditas rising up through the air. Up ahead in the distance, I saw purple neon lights. My stomach hungry and my choices slim. I exited on the right as I got to the doorway of the Taco Bell. I was thinking to myself, I could get 7 tacos with hard shells. Then she asked me my order and how I'd like to pay. All my choices found me worried for my colon's mental state. Ooh, long one. Here comes the chalupas that I ordered. Got chicken and steak. Got chicken and steak. All over my face. All over my face. I'm living it, Moss. Look at all the food that I ordered. Nacho cheesy fries.
Nacho cheesy fries.
and black beans and rice. That is courtesy of Waffle House bringing longy but a goodie.
Yeah, damn.
You know, I'm about to go on a road trip, and this felt extremely appropriate to me. Also, you know, when it's a first-time guest, I like to just let them know
how bizarre the show is.
How it's weird.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. And that I have serious pipes and perfect
pitch. It's a cabin karaoke night here.
And I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
It's Mr. Miles Gray. You know what, Christy Yamaguchi, man, when you wrote that AKA, I read the last line like it was Bon Jovi's Dead or Alive, so I'm going to switch it up, that same AKA where it's, I'm living it, Mas. Look at all the food I buy. Nacho cheese and fries, add black beans and rice. Okay, so shout out to you. Again, I just took a new version on it. I inverted.
That was beautiful. Yeah. Well, and then this is fun because now we get to introduce our incredibly impressive guest.
Fantastic guest, yes.
A perfect intro is...
The juxtaposition like none other on the internet.
A public defender with Legal Aid New York, a writer who you've read on Teen Vogue, a commentator for the Law and Crime Network, and a contributor to The Hill. Please welcome the brilliant and talented Aliyemi Olorun!
Hey!
What's up?
Welcome.
First of all, I'm super impressed that y'all pronounced my name right and that y'all had them songs.
Look, we try. You know. How you been? How are you doing?
Good. I'm having a good day. I got paid today. Beautiful. There I was cleaning the poppers yesterday, and I feel rich temporarily.
How's the weather? You're in New York, I'm guessing, right?
Yes, I am in New York. It's sunny, but I'm a firm believer that sunniness is overrated. So, listen, y'all didn't grow up in the Bahamas in the summer in the heat time with no AC on, and your grammy refusing to turn it on, talking about catch the breeze. I've suffered.
Right.
Yeah, so does that have you looking forward to like fall and winter?
I love the fall. I love the fall. I think the fall is the best season and summer just has better PR.
Right. Exactly. Because look, nothing, I'm wearing a coat is undefeated.
Listen,
that's how I feel. Look, I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, like, hot as shit desert. I grew up, all people being like, I love it here. I'm like, man, I will move to where it snows. I don't give a fuck. I like variation. I like cold. Heat, it's not what it's always cut up to be.
Heat is really, the first time I really realized how much I truly hated heat was I was visiting a family island in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. And listen, it was only then that I really realized, oh, we're really from an island. Like, I was running for a tree. I felt like Baffle Tate. I'm like, please, Shane, help me. Somebody. We are not meant. And then the sun, the way it's giving it up now, I'm telling you, there's no ozone layer. I'm convinced. Nobody, you don't need to talk to the scientists anymore. I am telling you. There used to be a hole that is none. I can feel the sun directly, no filter, beating down on me directly. It's irresponsible to be outside in the sun. Yeah.
Yeah. The summer is so brutal, only getting more brutal. We talked on a recent episode about the beach is, you know, the beach is great, but only as relief from the extremely uncomfortable summer. You know, it's like I don't know. The fall is so great. I'm so excited. And this might just be the fact that it's the very end of summer speaking and I'm sweating through my shirt as we speak. But
not good for me either as a sweater. No.
And I'm about to drive through Death Valley and it's going to be bad.
Wear a coat, 124. Man, just as a bit.
Yeah.
Put on a North Face. Let me see a bubble goose just out there. I'm like, ooh.
Will that be the last thing you ever do?
Yeah, he's like, he died the second he put that on.
All right, Aliyemi, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of the things we're talking about. We're going to talk about the Safer American Plan and just the way the media regurgitates talking points that more cops equals safety. And we're going to talk about copaganda in all its, not in all its forms, but in some of its more popular forms, which Aliyemi, you have written about at length and brilliantly. So all of that, plenty more. But first, we do like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are or what you're up to?
Well, in my search history right now, I think it's foolishness. I've been arguing with my friends that Eeyore is black from Winnie the Pooh. And so that's what I'm on right now. One, which cartoon characters are actually black.
Wait, I like that. Wait, okay. Now that I'm thinking about this, does he live in the forest with them?
No, he does not live in the 100-acre woods. I'm glad you asked. He lives on the outskirts.
Okay, go
on. By himself.
Go on.
Yes. And I don't know if you've noticed. If you just look at the shared infrastructure of Eeyore's little Snoopy house versus everybody's full home estate, they got land, right? Everybody else lives in 100-acre woods. They don't even see Eeyore till the end of the episode. They spend all day frolicking amongst the 100-acre woods. And after they're done doing everything they're doing, eating, partying, going by rabbit, then they're like, oh, Eeyore, why so sad? What's your problem? Yeah.
He's like, I just got off my shift on the sanitation department. What the fuck are you talking about?
Listen, you're be calling them out. They be gaslighting them all day. They're like, he's depressed, but no one asked why. Nobody asked why.
They're like, Eeyore, you get really angry really easy. People don't...
Listen, I knew what was up as a child. Me and my grandma peeped immediately Eeyore was black. I remember they came to him at the end of the episode. He's like, hold on. You know, this was it's the adventures of Winnie the Pooh and everybody else do adventures, but not Eeyore.
Yeah.
Immediately. White flight. That's why everybody lives in 100-acre woods and he lives there.
Where does Christopher Robin live?
Right in the burbs with them. You notice that?
Right.
Oh, and he just kind of, he's like, yo, this is my backyard.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. White Christopher Robin and all the rest of them live in the same community.
Hmm.
Absolutely. There's that new horror movie, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and
Where Eeyore's Dead first.
Eeyore's dead already at the start.
Come on, over my side.
And they apparently the implied backstory is that Winnie the Pooh and Piglet ate him. Is that, did I make that up?
They murked him in some way. All I know is.
They were like, sorry, friend.
Horror movie, black person dies first. Winnie the Pooh horror movie starts out with Eeyore already gone.
Right.
Rest in peace, I'm just saying.
Or it's like the magical donkey man, Eeyore. They're like, tell us of your ways, magical man. Like, wait, hold on. What the
fuck? They got my mans out of there because he's one of us. He's a brother.
Okay. All right, shout out Eeyore.
What's something you think is overrated?
The Notebook.
Okay. The movie, The Notebook.
Terrible.
I haven't even seen that shit.
You really? No one has dragged you in your lifetime?
It seemed every person that was shaming me for watching it was a white woman.
And listen, and no, they love it. They love them some Notebook. And I'm like, what about this trauma-filled movie is doing it for you? Like, I don't... It's a sad film. It's honestly, the whole movie is a cry for help for Ryan Gosling's character and why no one ever in his whole life, no one ever sought to teach him that he was valuable. Like, your life don't have to be all about this lady. Like, your whole life, you spent summertime with this lady one time and now your whole life is about Jordy. Whole life. You never heard about no interest in his, just trying to make her dreams come true, sitting around waiting for her to come. Like, and then what happens? He spends his summer with this woman, falls in love with this woman. He gotta go to war. Because he's poor. First of all, he spends the whole first and a half of the movie being poor.
Is she rich? I haven't seen it either.
You either, Jack? What's happening?
I don't know.
Okay, whoever y'all are dating, they gotta pull it together. Y'all.
Yeah.
See, listen, this is what happens, right? Not the love version. Let me tell you what happens.
Okay.
So Ryan Gosling is dating this woman for this summer. They are young teenagers. She is a rich white lady. He is a poor white man. Her rich family ain't having that. So then he goes off to war, and he's sending all these letters. Rich family's like, throw those in the trash. You're like, he died, sweetie. Girl, he died. Shit. He is dead. He died at the war. And she's like, oh, it'd be like that sometimes. and she fully goes and gets her a rich man and she's kicking it, chilling. Good. Then he comes back from the war to with her man and he's like, oh, I should go and build her dream house. That'll do it. So he goes and builds. Yes, he does. He builds the dream home this lady talked about that summer, right? Goes, builds it. Eventually, she finds out, she sees a picture of him in the newspaper, and she's like, oh, shit, he ain't dead? she's not immediately like, oh, he not dead? Right. The love of my life, let me get my man. Nah. Then he comes to her like, oh, you know, I love you and whatnot. And she's like, So then,
really?
Yeah, she's still not with it. Then they have sex and she's like, that was cool, but I do got me a man. So she goes back to her rich dude. Then after a little bit, she's like, okay, I'll be with you, Brokey. I'll be with you. So then they get married and then late in her old age, she gets Alzheimer's.
She does.
So now she don't even fucking remember him. So now they go to the old folks home. And he dies with her. He like has a like times that out somehow his love gave him a heart attack at the right time with her, so he could die with her because he can't live life without Shorty. That is a horror film. That is a story about trauma, therapy. That is a movie, actually. That is an indictment on poverty. Because if he had health insurance from the beginning of the movie, he could have seen a therapist.
Wouldn't have needed her.
He would have sorted through that breakup in the appropriate way. He would have talked to the therapist and he would have wrapped that up. But instead, I'm watching, I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. And all the white ladies are like, ooh, best romance film I've ever seen. I'm like, is it?
Yeah.
Terrible. So, the
when I look at it, that film, it came out in June of 2004. So, that's the summer of my freshman year of college. And this is me in the process of rejecting everything I thought I like that was mainstream. Because, like, I got out of high school and I'm like, man, fuck all this shit I've been consuming. Like, that was kind of my mindset. I'm like, I ain't never listening to no fucking pop top 40 shit again. Fucking Notebook, fuck out of here. So, I had a very like contrarian, angry guy mindset back then, which is why, like, to this day, I think part of me was like, "No, I'm not that person." Then I do not engage with the Notebook.
I don't even know what my excuse was because I was a young girl and I loved all things romance. But I watched this and I was like, "I'm not feeling the love."
I do not want this.
I'm like, not you second pick your whole life, and then she forgets you. Now you dead. That's it. That's the whole life. No rollover minutes. We're not gonna start this life thing over. Terrible.
Truly. Yeah. I mean, yeah, and again, just good to indoctrinate people with that idea. It's like, look, motherfucker, you're going to be treated like they don't want you. You're going to be second best. You're going to die and they're going to forget about you.
Right, but if she chooses you.
And that's beautiful. And that's beautiful.
Right. And they loved it. Listen, ruin the generation.
I believe that's called codependency. Yes. And that's not good. Now, Jack. Wow. I did not know that was the plot of that.
I just knew the last part. Because I'm like, well, what the fuck is... I remember always asking people, I'm like, what the fuck is the Notebook, though? Like, why is it called the Notebook? And they're like, because they don't remember shit, and he has to read the Notebook to her. And I was like...
Which is terrible. That's also why 50 First Dates is terrible. I don't know why people love that either.
That movie is weird. Yes, I saw 50 First Dates, and that is weird at the end. Like, it seems like she's like a captive.
Yes.
Like, it's so strange.
Yes.
She's like, no, you can't go. Like, you have to.
Okay, every day I'm going to read it. You're going to do this whole thing. I have you on a boat. I'm pretty sure they're like on a boat doing this.
Right.
It is terrible. I couldn't believe it. Like, why is this? Just traumatic film, just horror movies. I was like, she gets into an accident. She forgets everything. And now he's going to make her do Groundhog's Day every day.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, he don't even have enough time in the day to convince her she loves him. It takes 24 hours just to, like, remind her.
Right.
All right, like, you get me. And then she's pregnant at one point. So now you impregnate the end.
Yeah, what happens those mornings?
Exactly. So hey, there's another, good. There's a good. Human growing inside of you.
Chill.
Like, listen.
I feel like every morning is him going, chill. Like, in the bed, and she's like, sit down and watch this motherfucking tape.
He gotta set an alarm for like an hour before her so he could be up and ready to give it to like.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, okay, you're strapped in. I know you are restrained right now, but this is for your own safety and that of the child. She's like, the what?
We have allowed some sick movies and shows to like really get away with.
And we're just like, aw.
Yeah, people are like, this is real cute. I was like, is it?
They love each other. Aww. Yes.
Yeah. In general, it's sick how much we have amnesia as a trope in media in general, like memory loss, because it ain't cute. I don't get it, but we keep doing it, but it's not cute at all.
Nah, I mean, like, I remember dealing with my own family, you know, like dementia, Alzheimer's, and that shit is, the last thing is like, it's so fun to look at my grandmother who's like, who are you?
Yeah.
And
like,
trying to show her pictures. She's like, that ain't me. And I'm like, oh, shit.
Right.
That's not a version where then I go to like a quirky like island cafe later and I'm like, man, I had a rough one today.
Right.
I'm like, I'm crying in my Mazda leaving the convalescent home. Like, fucking mortality is a motherfucker.
Just weeping. Just the most tragic thing.
Yeah.
What is something you think is underrated?
Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Okay.
Yes, like, please tell me y'all watch Courage too. No?
Uh-uh.
Neither one of you?
I know about Courage the Cowardly Dog, but I was not watching it in its heyday.
I hate how your childhood went for you, and I want more from y'all. Thank you. Like, there's just no reason why y'all... See? Well, then that proves my point. Courage is the most underrated. Like, I feel like, you know the way SpongeBob is... I mean, nothing's touching SpongeBob, obviously.
Uh-huh.
But Courage should be talked about more. We should be getting more Courage pop culture references, and my man don't get no love. So it's Courage for me.
It came out of, so, okay, so when this show came out, like, in its heyday, I'm, like, in eighth, junior high, high school. So I, because I'm constantly putting myself in that year, and I'm like, okay, I know why I wasn't watching this, because at this point, I was, like, trying to be like, yo, I'm watching fucking Tarantino. I'm fucking Cartoon Network.
That's what y'all were watching in your eighth grade year?
That's why I'm so maladjusted as an adult.
I'm judging all of y'all. My eighth grade year, I was watching Dragon Ball Z and Appropriate Things for Cool People.
Right. Well, you know, Scott, look, I'll one up you. Growing up half Japanese, I was watching Dragon Ball Z when I was like a kid. So when that shit came to the US, I was like, I've been off this shit. I was not. And y'all talking about Pokemon now?
No, okay, you got me there.
Yeah, so it's a little, I'm in a weird spot as like a black and Japanese American where like part of me is like, what's this white
person? Are you black and Japanese American?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's popping miles.
I'm like just I'm in my media mind. I had like I had many different forces at work with what I thought I should or should not be watching at that age.
Oh, that's bomb! But then you watch Boondocks. Boondocks is also on.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm throwing Boondocks and Courage the Cowardly Dog. That's my final answer.
Wait, so what's so good? Okay, tell me. I know, like when I look at the art of Courage, I know that's Courage, but I've never been like seen a whole episode. I'm like, oh, this is why people fuck with it.
I mean, Courage was just the realest motherfucker alive. I mean, that's
like, okay.
That's just the real tea, right? First of all, they call him Courage the Cowardly Dog, but wasn't shit cowardly about him, okay? Courage was out here living in the middle of nowhere, fighting off real fucking monsters every day to save Muriel's ass. And Muriel, so he lived with these two old people, his owners, Muriel and Eustace. Eustace is a hater, like a hater deep in his soul, like God, like when he was thinking a hater, he put Eustace on earth. So that's what Eustace is there to do, is to hate on Courage and cause the monsters to kill them all. And Muriel is very stupid, like fully just a dodo bird, but Courage loves her. But they can't understand him. The monsters be coming right to the door saying, hi, we monsters. We here to do monster shit today. And they be like, oh, Courage, get him some coffee. Like, Courage, shut up. And now full monster shit. Whole episode full of Courage got to save them. And the animation is amazing. But yeah, Courage is just that guy.
Oh, shit. Okay. So
the thing I was doing, because I'm old as fuck, I didn't watch. I was, you know, I think 19 to 22 when this came out. But I did, like, edit an article about, like, a fan theory about Courage the Cowardly Dog. And the fan theory is that, like, the monsters are just people from a dog's point of view. And, like, the whole thing is just, like, a really accurate depiction of what reality looks like from a dog's point of view. And like one of the things is like is Courage like have a like terrifying interaction with a vacuum at one point, maybe
but right. That me and that person there who made that fan theory, we might have to talk, because I mean, I believe like Ed and Eddie fan theories, right? That they're in purgatory, like that's what happens with the kids here. Yeah, the kids are dead, that's why the parents don't show up, yada yada. I'm all for it, believe it. But Courage, boy, if you see some of these demons and people coming from space and whatnot, and people do be getting murked, there is like a demon cat that, if you ever see the episode where Muriel's, Miles, I'm gonna send y'all a link to Courage after this, and we're gonna revisit it, because I don't think so. I mean, I want to hear it, like I'm open to the theory, but I definitely think those was real monsters fucking life up for Courage every day, wanting to kill Muriel and them, especially because they live in like the middle of nowhere. Like, that's the, and I, you need
so
to
hear
the theme song, top tier, it says that.
So the theory of them being in the middle of nowhere is that a dog's awareness of, like, have you ever heard that story, like, someone opens the fence and they're like, oh, there's another yard behind there? And it's like, no, there's, like, yards. Because a dog is, like, only aware of, like, what's happening inside their yard, essentially. And you so, see, like, they think it's in the middle of nowhere, but it's actually just, like, I don't know.
You see how establishment gaslighting Courage? You see that? You see this?
Exactly.
You see Courage finally gets his story out? And now look what they want to do. Like,
right.
he's unwell.
That's what they do. They're like, oh, there, Courage.
That's what's fucked up about it is that it's like, it makes you realize, like, oh, man, being a dog in a human's household would be fucking terrifying. Like,
you think dogs, you know... Dogs seem so, that's the thing though. Dogs do be seeming so happy, as opposed to like my cat. Like,
right.
Like he's happy, but I know he's like a person. He makes his own choices. Like if my cat kicks it with me, I know it's because he wants to, because he'll definitely say no. But dogs veer. They do. Maybe dogs are oppressed. Maybe they feel like this is what I got to do in right. order to get my meals and go right. with, like, you know,
diving for survival.
They might just be oppressed. You are correct. I'm prepared to think about that. Courage definitely is.
Okay, we're gonna send those links now. I'm gonna look at it with my read some fan on.
You gotta become a fan, Miles. I bet money you love courage.
Deep reading first, for sure.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the Safer American Plan.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zy Gang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. And we're back. And, you know, in between Dark Biden, Dark Brandon appearances last week that everybody was memeing up, Biden addressed, it seemed like he was addressing like a police union or something, because he was like addressing them as like, you guys, we expect you guys to do everything. So he announced his plan to deal with crime. And he said, the answer is not to defund the police. It's fund the police, Jack. We expect them to do everything to protect us, to be psychologists, to be sociologists.
He's literally making the case for the fund.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's so crazy. He went from it's fund the, like, this is why we should fund the police, and then gave the examples of why we should defund the police.
Right,
like,
why everything else isn't being adequately funded because we're giving all the money to the police.
Yeah, exactly. The we fund the police instead of mental health and, like, any resource that doesn't involve, like, armed people.
Right.
And it's a major fucking problem.
And right. And according to them, the police aren't adequately trained to do the things that you're already paying them billions of dollars to do. So I don't know why we would leave it to them to do all these other areas that we have actual experts and trained professionals to do. It's illogical. Right.
I like how he even evokes psychologists and sociologists, and those are the motherfuckers they're ignoring.
Yes.
Right. Exactly.
Yes. Those are the people they're actually defending while they continue to raise all of the money they're giving to the police.
They're like, golly, what's going on with that, huh?
Mm-hmm.
We should be funding you guys. They expect you to figure out the problems that we ignore because they go against the conventional wisdom about the
Carson. And it's not like people aren't, those are literally the arguments people are making, right? Give money to these social services and all these different other things. So the police aren't the people responding to mental health checks. Police don't have to respond to traffic violations and these different things and lead to these results. And the police unions are like, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Don't you dare. I wouldn't think of it.
Yeah.
And it's anomalous. Like what we do, the amount of funding that we give to the police in the United States is historically anomalous. It's the most any civilization has ever like used policing and like funded policing. And so any problem that people are like, well, our problem is we're not funding the police enough is no, like this is if policing was the answer, then the U.S. would be the safest place in the history of the world.
Exactly.
That's the quite frankly,
that's the simple truth they don't want to acknowledge, right? If policing and public safety is synonymous, then why are these not the safest places? And constantly, the places that are giving more and more money to police are also the same people whose media is constantly committed to this whole crime wave. Crime is up. All of this is the next thing. That's New York is a prime example of a place that presents it like itself like it's progressive utopia. And we give literally 10.4. It was $10.4 billion to the NYPD. We raised it. They just got $260 million more, even though they cut from education, they cut from the parks, they cut from housing, they cut everywhere else. But NYPD, more money. Meanwhile, what's happened? They continue to say the Post. You let the Post tell it. Crime is constantly raising. Oh my God! But NYPD was never defunded. They've gotten more money. Everything else is defunded. We see evictions up, education, all kind of housing issues, homelessness has spiked. And it's like, why is that? That's what I love. There's this feigned ignorance that politicians and media do with stuff. It's like, oh, conveniently, you see all these eviction moratoriums are lifted. You're evicting people 24/7 in the same breath. They're like, the problem that is homelessness, where is this coming from? Right. Oh, it couldn't have anything to do with the pandemic we just had where businesses were closed. Y'all lifted eviction moratoriums. Y'all have the jails full of like, it's not a coincidence. I think it's interesting, especially with homelessness and all the big cities. It's like New York City, LA. I think those are two prime places that talk about homelessness, like it's their job to do so. They're two of the most expensive cities in the world, not even just the country, in the world. People aren't homeless because they want to be homeless. They're homeless because they cannot afford to live there. That's just the reality of it. And instead of ever talking about, you know, livable wages or what rent has actually increased to, you know, New York City is constantly talking about how our homelessness has increased, but our rent has also increased. The average cost of rent right now in New York City is over $4,000 a month.
The answer to that, more cops, man. Gotta get more cops out there.
It's absurd. And I think the problem, too, is so many people are out of touch and don't have honest conversations about it. And I think it's because they also don't really know. Like, I'm a public defender. So I...
Yeah.
Yes. Not only do I represent poor people, but I'm also not well paid myself. And my apartment, and I just got this through New York City's affordable housing, right? Affordable housing and won the housing lottery. My apartment is $2,200, right? Like, if you get a warm-up, that is... What average person, the people who really, really need, and that's as a lawyer, that's as someone who is, how's the average person going to afford that? And also the average person can't even qualify for it because the amount of hoops they make you jump through to secure the apartments and how it works is, so they, like in New York City, the affordable housing lottery works like this. They let, you know, so gentrification, they buy these buildings up in these neighborhoods, like I live in Flatbush in Brooklyn. And then they charge the whole building is priced at like 6 times more than what the rest of the neighborhood is. So then you price out the people who already live in the neighborhood and they can't get there. And then what they'll do is they'll take like a couple of units in the building like mine and say, this is affordable, but it's actually just 4 times less than the rest of the neighborhood as opposed to 6. Exactly. Yeah. And so you get people who still the people who are most in need. They're only like the smallest handful of places that they can actually afford in the affordable lottery. So it's just a myth. The reality is homelessness, poverty, all these things are a direct response to the ways that our government is already failing these people in their communities. And that's just the conversations they don't want to have. And they pretend as though people who say to address it that way don't care about crime, or you want lawlessness or you want anarchy. And that's not the case.
Yeah. So in response to that Biden speech, CBS News, this is how they tweeted it. The Safer American plan aimed at reducing gun crime is based on a, quote, simple notion, says President Biden. The answer is not to defund the police. It's fund the police. He adds, we expect them to do everything to protect us, to be psychologists, to be sociologists, but like nothing else. So they're just pasting his talking points into a tweet and putting it out there.
And that's how our media does. I mean, that's how our media literally does. It regurgitates like politicians and especially police narratives as pure fact. There is no questioning of it. Just this is what they said. So this is the factual matter of it. And the problem is the average person is a consumer, not even as a negative to them. Right. The average person is busy dealing with their own life and the trials and tribulations that they're not being, you know, helped with. So they read information and they say, all right, I don't have time to like research this or assume there's more to it. So if I'm constantly fed that, like, you know, police are a necessity, you know, police are the necessity, you know, they're the people who find themselves in the criminal system. They are in some way to blame for their own circumstances. And, you know, the system is about producing just outcomes. Even when they hear about police brutality or for them, it seems like an outlier or a mistake or the system, you know, going wrong, as opposed to this is what it produces every day.
Yeah, I mean, the media portrays the asserted motivation. So this is from Alec Caracatsanis, who's a abolitionist and also a So he was saying that like the media portrays the asserted motivations of powerful people as their actual motivations. Like this is how propaganda, like they will just say whatever the police say they were trying to do was what they like without any criticism. Yep. It's like if they reported that BP is actually an organization that is designed for taking care of the climate, addressing climate change, because there's an ad that BP puts out that says that shit.
Yeah.
And it's just like that. That's a good trick. And like everybody listening should always like watch how the media will just take at face value anything a powerful person says about their motives, but then somebody who is, you know, killed by the police, arrested by the police, you know, their motives will immediately be called into question.
Yeah.
Like anybody who's not powerful will immediately, like, it'll be thrown up as, like, we don't know what they were doing there. We don't,
powerful,
you know.
Powerful people and police, their opinions, their story, their narrative is treated as fact, and any level of pushback to that is a conspiracy or something that needs to be investigated. Because I go one step further, even in media, when you write op-eds and things like this, even if you make the entire argument, right, you have everything sort like cited for why you believe this, right? This is the actual motivation behind whatever the police are doing or the politicians are doing. You cite it to a million facts. They'll say, well, the police didn't say that. You know what I mean? Like, oh, it's your opinion. Right. Oh, they'll take that out. Oh, we can't speak to their motivations. You know, there's always this desire to give them the benefit of the doubt that does not exist in our society legally any other way. Like when you think about it, even if we look at how police investigations are conducted in America, if I call the police and I say Miles sent me 13 text messages cussing my ass out, you in New York City, you best believe you can be arrested and charged with aggravated harassment in the third degree. I represented many people. All you need is the accusation. But when it comes to police, when it comes to politicians, you could watch the whole incident on video.
In 4K.
Investigation. And the police get to DA's offices and the police offices get to investigate themselves, you know, investigate themselves and say, ah, no, our intentions were pure. It was this, all these different things. But usually, if you say it in court any other time, obviously anybody accused of a crime, I tell the court, you know, no, we deny this. Our story is this. And you know what they say? That's an issue for trial. That's an issue for the jury. That is your argument. Everybody has the right to make an argument, but not when it comes to the police. The police get to make their argument and decide, oh, no charges should come.
Yeah, they're like, okay, that's all cap. That's what I heard.
Yes.
Case closed.
Yes, there must always be something you are not seeing, some other way to spin it. You know, how many different cases have you seen? You've watched police brutality on video and then they tell you to do an investigation and you don't hear anything for a year or two. When you finally look back, quietly, no charges were brought. The prosecutor's office declined to bring charges.
Right. And they're always on a leave with pay.
Yes. Usually. Always. Always on some paid administrative leave.
The one thing, too, is like, you know, I think because we've allowed like just this consistent definition of crime to just be like the dominant narrative of like crime is when bad people do bad shit.
Yes.
That's what crime is.
Yeah.
There's not, we have such a crumbling society that people are merely trying to survive and do things to survive and doing things that that you would think, oh, I would never do that. But that's maybe you from your perspective where you have a safety net, some kind of support system where others purely are trying to survive. And I think that allows constantly for cops to be like, yeah, you know, these people are bad or whatever. It's like, I don't know, somebody who's stealing like food. I don't know what, like, I don't see TikTok videos of people being like, yo, this is how I got a Lambo because I'm stealing food.
Right.
And then like flipping it. That's not what we're talking about. And I think it allows for this constant like dehumanization of people, which easily allows the like for people to have like this, you know, easy thought pattern to occur, which is cops said they're bad. That's bad. I don't know why they're bad, but if they're bad and they're criminals, then that's crime. And that's I don't need to have empathy for that.
Right. And what I think also is important is that no one stops to discuss the fact that the quote unquote victims of crime and perpetrators of crime are the same people, the same community, right? Like how in the same breath, if we designate all these specific areas and communities as high crime areas, right? All the poor communities, all the Black communities, all the people of color communities, right? These are our high crime areas. So that being said, these are also the people that are the victims of crime. So the same communities that you're heavily policing and you're incarcerating, you feel like they are so bad, they need to be punished, and you do all these punitive things that prevent them from ever getting out of hold. You're punishing the exact same community you claim you want to be helping. So it's just so obviously logically inconsistent. And I think that's a problem. It's something I always think about as a public defender is when you meet your clients, they've already been failed in some way. This is not the first time, you know, the system has harmed them. Anybody that I represent, which is the vast majority of people that are in the criminal system, are destitute poor, like can't afford an attorney because I wouldn't qualify for my own services and I could not afford my own services or an attorney's services is astronomical. So the average person in the criminal system are people who are not seeing any money at all completely. And if you see that and you say, okay, these are people who already don't have any money, they don't have any resources. And now, all right, I'm gonna put you in the criminal system. You get a rap sheet, you get a this. Not only are they suffering, their children suffering, the whole community, their family, and it just is constantly regurgitating cycles and cycles of poverty. And also in addition to that, when we tend to end the analysis of crimes of poverty at like what is direct, like in a sense, oh, I'm poor, so I can't buy food, so I stole food. And then we're like, all right, those, we can understand that, you know, those of us on the left of people, they can reconcile themselves with that person, you know, doesn't deserve to be prosecuted. But it also comes to people that are committing assaults or they're, you know, they're fighting or they're cursing people out or they're doing, why do you think that happens? I always tell people, I'm far more likely to slap the shit out of you if my rent can't get paid. You know what I mean? Right. When the times in my life, when my life is good, when my things are paid for adequately dealt, I am so much nicer. I will deal with things so much better. I am so much willing to be a reasonable person. But if life is on you, you got a father in jail. You can't, you know, you got a mother with medical bills you're trying to pay for. You don't have health insurance. You can't get to school. You're losing your apartment. All these different things. You're more likely to fight somebody. You know what I mean? You're more likely to respond to life issues in the worst way. You're more likely to feel like, oh, I have to go sell drugs. I have to do these different things. And so it's a much larger phenomenon and problem in the way that poverty relates to these outcomes.
Yeah.
Because cops are just like the Roomba that suck up the failure of our capitalist system. And it's just like, yeah, we're just here to clean that up. No real, not about it.
They're one branch. They're one bad branch on a whole bad tree. That's how I like to see it. You know, we tend to focus on police and then we end the narrative there. And I think that's what can become problematic, right? It's like when I'm in court, it's not like it's just the police. The police, the judge, the court officers, the prosecutor are all on the same team. You by yourself, it's only you and your client on this agenda, right? The entire system is set up this way. Police might arrest people, but it's the prosecutors who've got to decide to bring the charges. It's judges, you know, convicting people, sentencing people. Because they're all, you know, in tandem. And also the laws that the prosecutors and the police officers are and the judges are enforcing and using, the legislators are the ones who wrote them, all this determinate sentencing. Yeah. They're all a concerted effort. So when we end the analysis and condemn the police, this one officer should be charged or this should happen this way. And then we're confused as to how the system keeps reproducing the exact same results.
Yeah. So Biden referenced the defund the police movement by being like, we don't need to defund, we need to fund. But NPR is also like NPR just published an article that claimed, and I actually heard this on NPR. We make fun of NPR a lot on this show for just like being ASMR for neolibs, but yeah. They also like they report some damaging shit sometimes. And this report was just basically being like, crime's gone way up and people aren't getting caught anymore because of the defund the police. And the thing they based it on was something that like a random person who they interviewed said. It wasn't like an expert. It wasn't based on statistics. This is the
like key. This point. Guy had a gun once.
That's the how whole, they go.
The whole sourcing. Anthony Branch, 26, got into trouble for carrying a gun when he was a teen. Watching the gun culture in his neighborhood, he thinks more minors and felons are carrying guns illegally now for one simple reason. Quote, defund the police, as he put it. That is...
That doesn't connect.
That doesn't...
What the fuck are you...
And the thing is, they know it's foolishness. They know it, right? Like, think about it. Courtrooms are technically public, right? The courts are open to the public. Anybody can come in there and sit there. But yet, we're not allowed to record or take a picture of anything that's happening in court. No one's allowed to. Court, you know, lawyers were not allowed to. Because the average person, people cannot go sit in courtrooms and go watch entire court. But that's not going to happen, right? But if people did and people saw what actually happens in court, what's the average thing that is a crime and what people are being prosecuted for and how it's being treated, they would feel differently about it. So what they do is they take these sensationalized stories, they produce shows like Law and Order and everything else that's on our TV, yeah. And it treats crime. People think of crime. Like, people so often say to me, I have represented over 1,000 people, in very few cases are anything that's like salacious or wild or anybody who does. Like, it's just regular everyday life things that you wouldn't even realize are criminalized. When I first became a public defender, it was jarring to me realizing how much shit I could have been arrested for if I just happened to be criminalized, you know what I mean? Or if you know, lived in a certain society, like the entire Bahamas, which is where I'm from, every Bahamian person would be behind bars in America's criminal system absolutely immediately. Just the whole way that we engage. I once represented a lady who got arrested like shortly after giving birth to her child because like a woman was texting her, like arguing with her, like during labor. And she was like, fuck you, whatever. Don't play with me. You know what I mean? Something like that. And they arrested that woman for aggravated harassment in the third.
Jesus Christ.
They do stuff like that. I represented so many people where they arrest them because they were banging on their own door because they locked the door. They locked themselves out. Now they charge you with criminal mischief and say, well, you don't actually, this is a NYCHA building. You don't own that door. So... Yeah. Wow. That's the nonsense. The amount of people who have sat in Rikers because of traffic violations, things that like they literally...
Invasion.
Yes, it's absurd. Yeah. It's absurd. So, you know, they intentionally keep that stuff away from you, and then they choose these outlier cases to sensationalize the system. And so people think of everybody that's in jail as other. They don't think of them as, you know, you are me. Exactly. But if you actually, you know, put a magnifying glass on anybody, and it probably don't even have to be a good magnifying glass, they're committing some form of crime. They're doing something that's technically illegal because America's overbroad.
Yeah, they can find a way. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd all be in jail, child.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back to kind of continue talking about this and Law and Order, the TV show, not the broad concept.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
And we're back. And, you know, as we were talking about before the break, like this kind of brings up the question of, you know, now we had, I think I've heard you talk about the fact that like the Alayemi, that like the Black Lives Matter movement in 2020 could be considered like one of the largest like social civil rights movements. And now the main way we hear about it in the mainstream media is like these things being like, we don't got to defund the police. We got to fund the police. Yeah. And like NPR, like blaming it for straight up murder. So this like kind of raises the question, why is this particular lie so just deeply like so hard to shake that like violent armed police and human caging are the only way to deal with things? And, you know, it's structurally integral to our society. It's like a lie that is...
That's the answer.
Know, undergirds all of the white supremacy and that's, everything.
And that's your answer. It's structurally undergirded. That's why something doesn't become the status quo because a majority isn't invested in like defending and maintaining.
Yeah.
That's the why.
But one of the like how, I guess, questions of like how they got everybody to like kind of go along with it is you pointed out, and our super producer Trisha Mukherjee is joining us to talk about your argument in a piece for Team Vogue about like Law and Order, the TV show, and just, you know, propaganda in general being like creating this standard narrative where the cops are the protagonist.
Yeah. I mean, it's in every, so I guess I tried to look at it commonsensically, and I think I have the benefit of my family's Bahamian. They live in the Bahamas, so this isn't their society at all, but we watch the same things. My mother so often responds to me, who is in the Bahamas. She don't vote here. She don't live here. She don't have no reason to be invested here, but she is, child. And my mommy and them is a heavy propaganda house. My mom and them, Law and Order, Snapped, all of it. My mommy is watching it all and she loves it. Okay. Her boy, Stabler and them, she'd be ready to fight me in the house over this stuff. And I recognize, you know, and I thought about it early on from jump is, one of the first things we teach people, you know, it's like, oh, this, you know, 911, we teach little children, you know, this is not, here's your parents' number, here's 911, you know, you play cops and robbers, cops are the good guys, robbers are bad, everything you watch has, you know, protagonist, antagonist, the antagonist is automatically treated as the villain, and in so many things, beyond just the amount, the sheer volume of shows that we have is just direct propaganda, like Law and Order, CSI, even like Lucifer, TV shows, like so many of them have this. But I thought about this even the other day, with like cartoons you watch and you don't even realize it. Like I was a big Powerpuff Girls, like big into Powerpuff Girls, like love me some Powerpuff Girls, okay? And I realized the other day and I'm like, why didn't I notice that these three little gals was agents of the state's beating people out to the white meat the minute the mayor called them up. Like, you ain't never noticed that? Like, the whole, right. That's literally what it is. The pop-up girls, the mayor calls them up red button. Hey, we just heard some fuck them up. Immediately, the minute they see him, there's a whole this episode. They see Mojo Jojo in the food store. Mojo Jojo is trying to buy some groceries. They beat him and they beat his ass down. And everybody, right? Like, if you even think about it, Mojo Jojo, the whole townspeople, all the townspeople look like the Powerpuff Girls, apricot colored white people, just like Professor X, right? All of the villains. Mojo Jojo green, Fuzzy Lumpkin pink, the gangrene gang is green, the boogeyman is blue, him is red, all the people of color are villain criminals that get their ass whooped 24/7. And you realize, right, like, eventually everything you watch is kind of treated like this, like, this is who we've designated as good, and this is who we've designated as bad, and nothing in between really matters. It don't matter. You don't see no due process in the pro, you know? And you watch, like, you know? But it really is like that. How much of things you watch, and it shows you, even when it shows you that the police are breaking the law, like, their rights are being violated, it's showing you how the police has to, because this bad guy, or they're constrained. I watched the Chippendale rescue movie the other day, and it was the same shit, like, oh, the police were working with Chippendale to try to get Peter Pan and them, and the police are like, oh, we want to do something, but we can't, Chippendale, because you have these constitutional rights, yeah, and stuff. So Chippendale were like, shit, all these damn pesky rights.
Yeah, due process is treated as, like, it's never been no good way. In a yes. single movie. Yes. It's like, yeah, right, due process.
Yes.
Like, the only person who brings in up due process is, like, about to get their head smashed into their desk by Russell Crowe, yes, before he, like, goes out and catches the bad guy.
Yes, yes. You know? And, like, all jokes aside, like, that is something, like, we don't realize how much we're, like, how we're taught to perceive the world as ingrained and stuff. Like, even in Lucifer is the literal fucking devil. Like, he's Satan. He's literally Satan. And for Satan to be redeemed in the eyes of God and the world, he works with the LAPD.
Yes.
Like, I'm dead ass. That's the plot of the show. Like, that's the plot of the show. And you know who's the only person they matter-of-factly is saying is going to go to hell? The defense attorney. And in order for her to go to heaven, she had to quit the defense attorney and go become a DA. And then they kill her. She goes to heaven.
Because the defense attorney is just trying to get bad guys off the hook.
Yes.
And, like, it's all a world. Yeah.
Yes. And you realize when you watch TV, man, and you think about it more, you see it in everything. That person, they're always the bad guy, or the poor character, whoever it is. They're bad. They're this. It's like that.
Yeah.
It's funny that you bring up the LAPD, right? Because, Trisha, you point out, like, the kind of LAPD kind of has they a starring role off. In the beginnings of all this.
Yes.
Right, exactly. So, Laimi, I read your article. First of all, your work is amazing. It's so cool. But yeah, so I just started going a little bit deeper into this propaganda in TV shows around crime. And one interesting thing I found out was, of course, like, the media has always supported the police through the U.S., the history of the country. But in the 1950s, it was actually formalized because this actor, director, Jack Webb, he made this deal with the LAPD where if the LAPD would allow him to access police equipment and quickly approve permits and get off-duty officers as extras in his movies, he allowed the LAPD to read over his scripts and basically just veto anything that they didn't like. So, of course, they're not going to approve anything where the cops are portrayed as bad. And then this has just been the standard set in Hollywood and just set in TV and movie industry where the police is literally controlling what we see on the screen in a lot of ways.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You realize it so much more. I have a friend who was writing a script the other day, like entertainment, and he had, like, just not even thinking about it because it's so, like, into shows. And when you think of how public defenders are depicted in all media and we're depicted as bums, right? Like, bums. Anytime you see a public defender in anything, like, they're dropping their files, they're disheveled. Like, and it's a way, it's how...
They need foot cream.
And it's how the system, like, goes and blames. And it's so funny because that has so much, you know, a lot of how your relationship plays out with your clients has everything to do with what their initial even perception of you is. And if a public defender gets blamed, like, when you think the money is attributed is in these ways deliberately, a public defender is underfunded, but the prosecutor's office is not. But we're funded by the exact same entities. We're opposite across the aisle. We're doing the same level of workload, but it's deliberately set up where the public defenders are ill-equipped, right? And even within that system, like, public defenders get blamed for plea deals or presenting you with a plea, which is You're obligated. You have to present whatever is the plea offer, but the plea offer is made by the prosecutors. The reason why you even have to tell them, oh, you should probably take a plea because this is what's likely to happen at trial because of determinate sentencing done by legislators and what the judge is going to punish you. It's so many different ways. The system is actively doing all these different things, but how does our media spin it to people? Oh, if you could afford to have is these broke-ass, bum-ass public defenders that are causing you to go to jail. And again, it all, you know, relates back to poverty in general, because even in a world where we pretended the problem was the public defender, the problem is this public defender, that's still a reflection of the fact the majority of the people in the criminal system are poor, you know, and they're being represented by public defenders as opposed to they can't afford paid representation. Not that it's true that public defenders are ill-equipped, but even if that was the case, and it's not like the court doesn't know. I think something people forget too, and I appreciate that people are optimistic or they have, I don't know, more faith in their actors, but the court knows everything else that you tell the rest of the society that shocks their conscience and gets them to see, like, oh, the system is messed up. And they think, oh, we need to get that information. Like, the people in power, the people doing it don't know. I'm assigned by the court. The person who sets the bail is the same person that just said, this person has no money, they can't afford a lawyer, and I'm also going to set a mad money on them for bail because you're going to go to jail for something you haven't been convicted. They know it's deliberately done that way. And I actually, in law school, I went to a prosecutor mill for a law school. I was like the only public defender in my class. Everybody else was a prosecutor. But in going to that In going to that prosecutor mill, you know, they pressured me to do an internship at the DA's office one summer, and it went the way you would think a person like me in the DA's office. it was terrible. But I remember the one thing I appreciate is I confirmed that all of the horrible things that I think academically, you think like, oh, you have to parse out racism. You more so think it's like, oh, if I statistically look at the numbers, you'll realize it's racist. Nah, it's up front there. They're actively like trying to force and muscle people assigned supporting their positions, and because people don't know how it actually works and the maneuvers and what, you know, what happens from on the legal end. So they'll be like, you'll bring in people and they're like, oh, I don't want to press charges. I don't want a criminal case, or I want them to have, you know, therapy. I want them to get this. And they'll be like, oh, well, you need to support this. If you sign a supporting deposition, I could get them counseling or whatever. But they really mean is sign this. And now I have the document I need to proceed on this criminal case with this person. And in the case of, there's a certain amount of days where if that's not signed or they don't have that paperwork, if you have somebody in on bail, they have to come out. You have to get them out. So what they do is they force muscle these people, sign it now, you know, and then now this person is stuck in jail. So now they're forced to take a plea or want to, you know, negotiate with you a plea because they're literally going to sit in prison on a case they're in. You were never going to be able to prosecute. They were never going to be able to get convicted of or whatever. But now they're in this position. Right. And that's the unfortunate reality. Like people in Rikers, people, they hear about places like Rikers, but they don't realize Rikers is a pretrial detention center. If you hear about something that's this infamously awful place, you think it's for infamously awful people. You don't realize it's anybody that gets arrested in New York City for anything. Traffic infraction, jumping a turnstile, whatever. You don't have money, that's where you're at. And Rikers isn't even the worst of its kind. You have Cook County in Chicago where the average person is waiting for their trial in prison 4 to 6 years, 8 years. Some people in there 11 years doing full bids on things they have not even had a trial on. It's absurd, but that's how they stack it.
Right. And and I think because of that, like, sort of gap between what the lived experiences of the people who are actually grappling with the system and then like the writer's rooms that are then like, I don't know, like I'm rich and like we got off because we got a rich, like a good lawyer.
Yeah.
I think that probably feeds into this problem as well. Right.
My dad got me a good lawyer when I was arrested in college for pissing in the street.
Oh, right. And that's another trope you see a lot because I think you're seeing these writers reflect back what even their own experience was like. I fucking ran over a homeless guy, but I got a good lawyer.
How many times you watch a white show and a character like gets arrested and they're out like the next scene and you never hear about it for the rest of the show? Right. Like, you know what I mean? No charge, no case, no da 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 da. That's how it's treated, because that is often very much of a reality. Like, even on the rare occasion, I've represented over 1,000 people. I probably have not represented 30 white people. Like, there were that many. Right. Wouldn't even be. I remember all my white clients by name because they're few and far in between and they're always fucking outraged that they're in this. Listen, no one more outraged to you than a white person that's been arrested. They will call you every, I used to have a white client call me every day and go, so people can just lie on me? And I can go to every day. She couldn't believe it. Could not wrap her head around it. And that's often what the experience is, because even when I'd have them, they dismiss it at arraignment. they would dismiss it right then. They would offer them. I once had a white guy was on a motorcycle, did a high-speed chase. He high-speed chase on his motorcycle for the police. I mean, he was really on 10. Gets into an accident, jumps off the bike, keeps fucking running, jumps the fence. They eventually get to him. They dismiss it at arraignments. They would never have done that shit. Like, one time I represented, like, back-to-back. So, same arraignment shift, literally. I have the files. Did this one. Immediately did it. Same judge, same prosecutor. Represented a black guy who's accused of having one blunt. They asked for, like, $3,500 bail on him. Right? Hmm. Right? Immediately. Right after, represent a white guy who was found with a bunch of drugs. The dealer, white dealer, consent to release. Like, they'll do.
Jesus Christ.
And what's the grounds? Or one time I represented a white girl who was accused of some wild shit. Like, some wild shit. And I remember looking, I could see the prosecutor next to me, and you could see their files, right? Like, across. I could see the pictures of the victim in the case, in who was an Arab guy. I could see the pictures of the victim in the hospital. So when I see that this is at bail, I'm like, oh, fuck. She going to jail. Like, they about to show those pictures. Like, they about to, you know what I mean? There was a white prosecutor. She just closed the file and consented to release. She just didn't say shit about the picture. And I'm not going to say, like, that's my client. But I'm like,
right.
I remember that day being like,
wow.
An application, yeah. Like, oh, this is a different fucking system. This is not something I have to academically parse out. This is happening real life. Like, I'm looking at them like, hey, yo, y'all know that I saw y'all just not do this for the black people. Like, I'm here. Right. I'm witnessing it. And it's like, or they'll call you. Yeah, they'll literally call you when it's your white clients. The way they talk about it, the prosecutor, is entirely different. They'll like, that same case with the white girl with the Arab victim, the prosecutor was like, this had been on the phone. They called me because they wanted to prosecute the Arab guy that was in the hospital based on what she's saying. They know to some degree that she fucked him up. He's in the hospital. She's just saying that he did something to her too. And now they call me like, oh, they want to charge him for a felony because they can't talk to my client, you know, without my permission. And the prosecutor said to me, well, like, oh, well, you know, she's accused of whatever to him. But, you know, apparently, you know, he lied. I've never had, that's my story. My story is always my client didn't do it. I've never had the prosecutor credit my story to my client is innocent. Only when I have a white client and they're like, yeah, must be some misunderstanding. Something.
A believer.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
White supremacy.
Yeah.
So, like, with the copaganda, like, I know we see, like, we're talking about, there's, like, all these terrible tropes, like, cop equals good, you know, get your good lawyer and things like that. Trisha, what are, like, other, because I think those are, like, and I think those are the most broad versions of things we see, but there's so many other ways that I think this, quote, unquote, criminal justice system is represented, which I think is a total misnomer, but what are the other ways that, like, those things are being?
Right. So, of course, there's that overarching idea that, like, when you have this protagonist who's a cop who you're, like, really emotionally attached to and kind of manipulated into supporting in these movies and TV shows, if they do bad things, like, you still don't consider them bad. So that really affects just the public perception of police violence. But then looking a bit deeper into it, so there's this study called Normalizing Injustice that was conducted by a nonprofit called Color of Change. And so they just dive deeper. They do this great numerical study and look at several different shows. And so one thing that I read about was just like disciplining cops who are violent or who do really step out of line and harm the people that they're interacting with. So in this study, they found that only 3.7% of on-screen wrongful actions faced any investigation. So that totally normalizes cops stepping out of line, hurting people, and then never being punished for it, and actually usually being supported for it.
Right.
And I think this feeds a lot into cases like Breonna Taylor's, where the cops, it's like, should they be, like, are they going to be punished? I mean, it takes the system so long to, like, condemn someone for murdering
And it usually doesn't. And also, we need to remember that even when there is, right, like, when people get their civil settlements, the cops aren't punished. We pay for that. The cops can't be. Nothing. We're paying for that. Yeah, so we're paying for that. Nothing is happening at all. Yeah, and the average cop.
All the funding.
Yes, all the funding.
Yeah, they don't. And a lot of cops just get away scot-free. Like, there's just nothing done to them. Another thing that I looked into was sexual violence. So shows like SVU, they portray these really great detectives working on behalf of survivors of sexual violence. But in reality, like...
cops perpetrate a lot of sexual violence.
Exactly. Cops perpetrate the sexual violence. And then when people who experience it come to the cops, because that's what we're constantly told to do, again, like, since we're little, we see all these things that, oh, we'll call 911 and the cops will save us, when that's just so far from the truth. When we do report sexual violence, well, first of all, people are just scared because they know how fucked up the system is. But then when you do file a report, the police rarely do anything. And most people who have already survived this very traumatic experience are just dissatisfied with the response.
Yeah.
And then finally, so in terms of just reforming the criminal justice system, there is basically no discussion of that in TV and in show, movies. Right.
No.
Yeah.
Right. No.
And if it is, it's like a rabble-rouser hippie.
And that's the thing, right? They fight against any, like, they completely dismiss any discussion of, you want to talk about abolition, right, of the criminal system. Right. They completely dismiss that as though that's so radical. We should be talking reform. And anything, the slightest thing you suggest reform, the media then commits its all of its energy to attacking that 24/7. You try to do bail reform, you try to do things, and then suddenly they create entire, you know, propaganda and waves and discussions and stuff around fighting that. So what it really is they don't want any change at all. They like the system as it is. And I think that's an important part, is that whenever they're trying to say, you know, the bad apple discussion, I'm like, well, the police disagree with you, right? In a different world, if I have an organization and one person in my organization was a fuck up, right? And I believe that person, what they're doing does not represent this organization. I'm not going to fight you unless you get rid of that person, or, you know, these people are bad. But it's the police department, it's the police unions that say, no, it was okay that they killed him. When did they ever, when did the police unions, when did the police departments, when did the politicians get out and tell you, yeah, that's a bad apple. Yeah, that's bad. They never, they stand with that officer To the very end.
Yeah.
And then they do everything that they can around beating the rest of the community into submission, right? Let's say it was a bad apple. So every time we have a bad apple, let's think about the numbers on that. Every year in America, this is just shot and killed. This is just who police are recording as they shot and killed. So that's not all your George Floyds. That's not your Elijah McClain's. That's not your Eric Garner's. That's not your Alton Sterling's. That's none of the people that are being killed in another way. And that's none of the police brutality that does not rise to death. So exclude all of that. All your Jacob Blakes. The average police shoot and kill over 1,045 people every year in America. So let's say we got all of those bad apples, and what, maybe 5 of them, 12 of them for the year, maybe best case, get some kind of like large media attention. And then what's the response? They immediately send out militarized police to go beat the protesters, go arrest the protesters, curfews, and you get a bunch of charges. You get a bunch of videos showing police brutality on video. Even remember when they knocked that old white man down, that old man split his head open? Nope, no charges there. None of them. We just saw, yesterday or the day before, NYPD punch and beat up a 19-year-old girl, and Eric Adams came up and said, oh, the officers show great restraint. Or a few months ago, NYPD shot an 18-year-old in the head because he ran through a red light, and Eric Adams defended that too. So you see what I'm saying? Even if wanted to go with the bad apple narrative, let's pretend, okay, so we got thousands of bad apples, and our police departments, the police unions, our media, our politicians, and everybody in power says, no, they're not bad. So then what then?
Yeah. Right, exactly. Right. Yeah. You lost the messaging war
at that point. Yeah.
Right. And then to think about, like, how can we use media to change that? Like, how can we change that in movies and TV? And, as we talked about, it's just, like, so racialized. Currently, out of the 27 shows that the study covered, 81% of the showrunners were white men. Right. Out of 275 writers, more than 75% were white, and only 9% were Black. So the people who are creating these shows largely don't have any experience with the system that we're dealing with in this country. And so in terms of just what we can do to change it, I mean, one option is just the personal option to not watch shows that depict cops as heroes, as good people, as people who are not violent and coercive. And this could also be, you know, a signal to networks that we don't want to watch cops who are portrayed like this. Another idea is to cancel TV shows with cops in general. And this has actually been happening. Like the series Cops, which ran for around 30 years, was canceled, I believe, in 2020. And some other networks have also cut police reality series. But a lot of people are also saying...
Cops is actually back, though.
Yeah.
Is right. It actually?
Came back in September of last year.
Yeah, no, on Fox News, when, right? When people aren't paying attention, is it?
They announced it. Yeah, they slowly, like on Fox Nation, like
Fox
on their
Nation.
TV.
Oh my goodness. Right.
Live PD, and they just, they changed the name to Live PD to like On Patrol or some other dumb euphemistic, or not even.
Oh my gosh.
That's
see,
the
they
thing.
Fooled us.
Another slick thing they do with propaganda too, and enough people don't call it out, but what they love to do when they portray jails and prisons in any of these shows, they have a lot of white people. They have a lot of white people in the prisons and the jails. So it looks, people think the system was fucking way. Rikers is New York City. Think about how big New York City is.
Right.
Rikers is over 95% black and brown.
Jesus Christ.
Like, it's not this. Like, I saw this actually the other day. I was not watching The Flash anymore because The Flash is terrible now. I was watching a video about why The Flash isn't good anymore. And like, and the season, you know, they got the Flash in jail now, which is some bullshit. And Riverdale did this nonsense too, but the Flash is in jail, and he all around the jail with none but white people.
Mm.
Whole jail just full of white people. And
like,
I'm
are
like,
you in a federal correctly for people doing white collar crime?
It's slick shit. Or when Inventing, did y'all watch Inventing Anna when that came out on Netflix last year or this year? I don't know the time it's on.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
with the
I'm familiar.
That's
with
supposed to be Rikers. Whole nice. White, clean environment, just like some white girls chilling or whatever. You think that's what Rikers look like? You think you can even get into, there's a bunch of white what? A bunch of Anna Sorkins at Rikers? No. Right? Like, that is not the case, but they make it look like that because people become so comfortable with it, but it also becomes ingrained. You don't question, you don't question it. There's so much to, it's even, to me, the scariest parts are the scariest things when it comes to developing our consciousness, our racial or shared consciousness as a society, isn't what they explicitly tell us. It's what they don't, and we don't pay attention to it. It's like when you think about the fact that the criminal system, it's a legal system, it's called the criminal justice system. That's intentional. That's inherently intentional because if you, the first thing you learn, you associate justice, your whole concept of justice is criminal prosecution. That's where, you know what I mean? That's what it is. You taught that from the very beginning.
The scales. It's like, no.
Yes. For you, justice is like people don't even think of any other way to respond or that there are other ways to respond to anything or crime or problems, right? Justice is police arrest you and put the bad guy in jail. That's what justice is to people. And it never even occurs to you to question it. And I realized that in college when my professor, I was, you know, running on like I usually do about the system being racist and yada, yada, yada. And my thesis advisor, who's a white lady, who was just like, you know, you sound like you'd be a person who would be into abolition. And I was like, you mean abolition? Getting rid of the prison altogether? No jail? Like, you know, even as a person who thought the criminal system, I knew the criminal system is racist and is unjust. I was taught like to think of the criminal system, like how you think of water and air and oxygen. You know what I mean? We have a civil society. Like you think you have to, like that is a foundation that must exist. And you have to work from there on how do I correct this thing rather than the thing being bad. Because you're taught that this like man-made institution is just, you know, vital. And that to me is a great issue. But I think as far as how do we stop seeing it? At the end of the day, they do what we like, right? Like media, if you think about it, media, just what we're watching our shows, how things are cast has changed drastically present day to what it was, shit, just 10 years ago, let alone even as a kid. There's so much things that's changed just because we've changed as a society, how we respond to it. You think all these diverse ensemble casts, they keep getting and stuff is because they want to? You think they diversify in the Gossip Girl and all these shows because they think it's cute is because people respond in a particular way. So if you start, you know, calling this out, bitching and da-da-da, yeah, the right will bitch and moan on Twitter and True Social or whatever, they be making their noise. But the reality is people who want to line their pockets, they will start making the corrections and the changes because you don't want to watch it like that. So I think we got to call out propaganda, but not just even in the shows that explicitly have cops. It's the way, even just the idea of these kind of systems or hierarchies are put in everything else. Like, and that's what really, to me, is the more dangerous, all the things that you're watching and you don't realize that it's like this. It's enforcing the exact same kind of dynamic and like power relations, even without the explicit police.
Right. Mm-hmm. It seeps in.
Exactly. Sure.
Well, allow me, it's been such a pleasure having you. We got to have you back. This is, truly an amazing guest. And I feel like I could talk to you for a whole day. But what? Where can people find you, follow you, experience you?
Find me on Twitter at Miss Allurin, MSOLURIN. I'm that on all social media. I have a Substack named Allurinati. I love it, where I write my essays every month, and I'll be on the Hill on Tuesday.
All right.
Thank you, y'all.
Amazing. And is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
Honestly, it's foolishness, Jack. There was a tweet. There's a Twitter thread right now. Like, what's your favorite moment in reality TV? And the quote tweets, they are gold. I am just going through Flavor of Love. I love New York heaven. Okay. Oh. Listen, Matt.
Oh, yeah. I have a theory that January 6th happened because we didn't check that white girl who was talking out her neck all black. Buck Wild.
You know what though?
We let Buck Wild cook to our own detriment.
You know, listen, I watched it the other day and I was like, yo, New York was ahead of her time, you know, with just like not being with the shit. Like New York was like, don't talk. Like she was really ahead of time. And I think back then I was like, why? I feel like you me might not even realize, like, why are you hating on Buck Wild watching that? And I was like, get her.
Like, I was like, get her ass, get her out. Yeah, it's so weird how differently I respond. I'm like, see, we let that shit slide. Right. We shouldn't have.
I was like, oh, you know what? You work with us. Get up.
Fall off, Tiffany Pollard.
Yes, me too.
And Trisha, pleasure having you as always. Thank Where can people you find you, follow me. You, and is there a tweet you've been enjoying?
Oh, okay. So I don't have social media. So
that's right. I always act like I'm surprised by this.
I've still been enjoying the view out my window, though.
Nice. Good. Nice.
And you can listen to more of my work at People Place Power. It's a podcast I made about activism around the world. It's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else.
Amazing. Miles, where can people find you? What's the tweet you've been enjoying?
Twitter, Instagram, at Miles of Gray. You like basketball? Check out Miles and Jack got Mad Boosties. That's our basketball podcast. The league is, we're so close to the league starting up again. And also, if you like terrible reality shows and weed, check me and Sophia Alexander out on 420 Day Fiancé, where we just, you know, talk about our favorite mess of a show, 90 Day Fiancé. Okay, some tweets that I like. First up is, actually, it's really just first one. Worm Adderall at _ Mary Boy tweeted, are monster truck rallies a competition or is it just like a monster truck recital? Yeah, that's interesting. How do we look at that? Is there a competition? Yeah. And then at Papa Pishu tweeted, Biden and the Dems got exactly 5% saltier and the Republicans started acting like an Italian football player faking an injury.
Yeah, that's true. Oh my God. Rolling around on the ground holding their ankle. Oh my God.
They called us fascists. We are though, but come on now.
You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. And Depths of Internet Archive is retweeting some interesting stuff from like poll. I'm scared of hackers because this is from November 2003. They hack into NASA 5%. They steal things 4%. They are violent sociopaths 4%. They use amphetamines and speed 7%. They help Osama bin Laden 14%. They're un-American 5%. They smell bad 58%.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's just fun to take a little snapshot of how stupid we were extremely recently. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, what song do we think people might enjoy?
This one, so we're going to go out on a nice little instrumental track from Ivy Lab. It's called All Day Swimming. Look, it's hot out there. Everybody just dream of just swimming all day, cooling your body off in the water. The beat is very, you know, it's drippy. I don't know how to sound. It sounds like you're at a pool party, but maybe on an alien planet. It's so cool stuff. So this is Ivy Lab with All Day Swimming.
They should have called it Alien Pool Party, but they're lost. The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That's going to do it for us this morning, but we're back this afternoon to tell you what is trending, and we will talk to y'all then. Bye.
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 Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.